galera cairne agus falta roig, famed in history, famed in song and famed in story is the greats of hurling. And crowds have come from far and wide to see this game. Everything's set, everything ready for the start of this great game. And the game is on!
Hello and welcome to this week's GAA Weekly. Gary Doyle here, and we've got a busy pod for you. Anthony Nash, our hurling analyst, runs the rule over the weekend's action, forensically looking at the way Ballygunner turned around their Munster semi-final against Na Piersaik, how Ballyea managed to get over the line against St Finbars, as well as revealing the area of the country that he considers the most passionate hurling hotbed in Ireland. Anthony will also go into detail about why this is the time of the year that keeps inter-county players sane, fresh and motivated. His thoughts on that topic are fascinating, really worth hearing. We hope you enjoyed it.
Right, Anthony, we're going to start with Ballygunner's win over in the Piersaik. Incredible game, incredible comeback by the Waterford champions, reigning All-Ireland club champions. It was a game that threw up a number of talking points, not least the sheer force of will that Ballygunner displayed to turn around a 2-11-1-8 deficit and outscoring the Piersaik by 11 points in the subsequent 33 minutes of that game after going down 2-11-1-8 on 27 minutes. How did it happen? What was your take on the turnaround?
Firstly, I just got to let the members know, like, that you were slagging me last week that I couldn't get off the fence, and I was being kind of a bit cautious in predicting this match and other ones. Do you know what? It was just, first of all, brilliant for club hurling.
Yeah.
I think I said it last week in the show, saying, like, that this, if this was an All-Ireland final, wouldn't we be thrilled? Like, you know, with the build-up to it. Now, it was all hope at the time. Like, I was hoping it'd be a great game. And we just got it, like, you know. The weather was good for it, you know, November weather, like, was quite good. The pitch looked immaculate into the Gaelic grounds. It was great for people to see it as well, the new surface there. And it all led to an unbelievable game between two titans, really, like, you know. So, like, it actually lived up to the bill. Like, often, you know, I don't know, in soccer and other sports, you'd Man United and Chelsea or Arsenal or something like that, and they'd be a nil-all thriller because they're both afraid to go at each other, like, you know, and out of respect. And yesterday's game could have been similar. It actually could have been, but not two teams went at it. It was just the ferocity, the contact, the, you know, the real, like, willing to stick to game plans and, you know, you do this and we'll still counteract. It was just, look, it was brilliant. And you know what, for a year that has been a brilliant club championships around the place, it just added to it. And, you know, it'll probably throw up the conversation again, the split seasons and stuff like that. Like, but I was unbelievable. Brilliant game and a massive performance.
What was it that got Ballygunner over the line? Was it willpower? Was it tactics? Was it both?
It has to be both, really. Like, do you know, I was texting a few lads from So Liberties. They were texting me in the first half, and I said to them, like, Jesus, this Napiershi performance is just brilliant. Like, you know, they're what they're doing to Ballygunner. And next thing, all of a sudden, half time comes, and Napiershi must have been delighted. I know they just missed a free. Kevin Downes just missed a free beforehand, but still, they were going 5 points up, like, and, you know, hurling very, very well and looked dangerous. Like, and then it was just as if Napiershi went into the dressing room and, you know, pressed a button that was just going to. Everything was going to go wrong for them in the second half. Like, and look, before we get into any detail, I hope Mike Casey's injury is only a kind of a brief one and it's not a cruciate again, because having to go through a second rehab, that would be terrible for him. But I really thought Ballygunner stuck to their idea and upped the intensity. So I was actually texting Rowan last night, like, you know, about it, and I was saying, like, there's something I'd love to kind of maybe go into more detail of. And I thought yesterday epitomised it. Like, have offensive puckouts become a pain in the arse to teams now? Like, I thought in the first half, Ballygunner struggled a bit with winning the puckouts. And in the second half, the majority of them, a lot of them went to Stephen O'Keefe, got him back, and he just hoofed it beyond the Na Piersaik half backline. And for me, what that did, right, plus Ballygunner's intensity rise, pinned Na Piersaik in the corner and allowed Ballygunner to kind of keep him in. See, what's happening at the moment in hurling for years is every team is trying to isolate one-on-one in the edge of the square or two-on-two in the edge of the square, and everyone else get out the field and work hard, right? And that makes a kind of a mesh and a mire inside the middle of the field where there's a battle zone. But for puckouts, you're trying to hold your defensive system. So every defensive team have extra players on that side of the field. So, like, what Ballygunner did yesterday was he said, right, well, the midfield is outnumbered. Let's go beyond it. And I thought, you know, for an old-fashioned routine and stuff like that, they did it four or five times, and I, like, it's not even the winning of the ball you have to understand. It's It's like you could say in rugby, it's territory. They got territory up in the Pearshig half and they made it difficult for the Pearshig to bring it out. What was the biggest thing? The intensity of the tackling in the forward line. The Pearshig couldn't get into the rhythm of bringing the ball out through the tackle like they were in the first half and getting into that delivery zone in the middle of the field and feeding Peter Casey and Will Hain and Adrian Breen inside. And I just thought that they broke down the likes of Boylan in the air and stuff. So I thought Ballygunner's up in intensity while still sticking with what they were doing was just the main difference for me. But like that's like people are saying, oh, Bally or the Pearshig imploded and the Pearshig they didn't. Like Ballygunner are All Ireland champions. And everything needs to go right to beat any All Ireland champion. And then the Pearshig nearly had them, you know. So I just thought it was kudos to both teams. I thought the Pearshig's first half performance was one of the best I've seen. And I thought Ballygunner's second half performance was one of the best I've seen. So, you know, it was just Ballygunner had that strength at the end and punch power from the bench again, really, like, wasn't it? That kind of, you know, helped them through.
Now that they're All Ireland champions, had they become a more confident team in the sense that they were trailing yesterday by such a huge margin and yet there was no sense of panic?
100%. Has to, like, it absolutely, like, because what winning does, right, in any level, anyone will tell you, will just give you confidence in that management team, in your, like, look, like, see the thing here, I'm using all the common buzzwords here, the process, the game plan, sticking to them. But, like, if that process, that game plan got Ballygunner through to winning an All-Ireland final, up to the bitter end of any game, you know, like, sure, the last minute goal, like, so, like, again, yesterday, they were put to the pin of their collar. And they just stayed composed and eventually wore the Pearshig down. Now, I had said prior to this that we played in the Pearshig with Sol Liberties, and I never came up against a team in club hurling that just physically wore us down. And they started doing that again in the first half yesterday. They bounced off Ballygunner, sent them into another player, and in the second half, Ballygunner did the same thing. So two teams actually playing a similar style of hurling were just... Like, but like the other thing I'd say to you, like, is if they met 10 times, how many times would each win? Do you know what I mean? It's 1-0 to Ballygunner with that thing. Like, but I think the two teams are very close, you know, in 15s, basically. I think Ballygunner probably had that little bit extra coming in from the bench, but it was just two teams playing very similar game plan, and Ballygunner just stuck to it. And I thought upping their intensity in the second half was the biggest thing.
Would they have turned that match around last year before becoming champions?
Yeah, it's a fair point. That's actually a good question. You'd never know. I think that, you know, it's actually a very relevant question. Like, I think the confidence has to get you through because you've not only have you belief in your management and your process, you have belief in your teammates that there is no panic, you know, that, like, let's stick it out. Like the thing about game plans for me, right, is that, like, you're going out as a team and as a, if your management and your team are working together, you both decide what's the best way to beat the opposition. Now, for a lot of teams, they decide in their game plan to start the year and they stick to it with a couple of tweaks. But, like, before that game, you decide this is the best way Ballygunner are going to beat the Pearshig. Well, why would you break away from that? You know, unless there's a sending off or something like that. But, like, they decided to stick with Desi Hutchinson, Fitzgerald side, letting the ball in, you know, direct running. But it's, listen, the thing about hurling at the moment is just that both forward lines, not only do they have to be able to create space and win ball, they have to be just winning dirty balls as well. And it's just dirty, rotten, hooking, blocking, working hard and literally coming off the field like exhausted. And, you know, it's funny, you see Davy Fitz inside in the stand yesterday, you know, looking down, like, and I'd say both teams play the style of hurling. He'd love to, you know, like just constant tackle, hit, onto the next person, hit, continue on running. It's gone so fit. Like, you know, there was debates years ago that footballers are way fitter than hurlers, and absolutely, like, physically wise, they probably were. But hurlers nowadays have to be able to run and run and run because the ball moves so fast, you have to get to the next point so quickly. Desi Hutchinson, there, for all his good work going forward, does exceptional work going backwards as well, you know, staying in the tackle and stuff, and even those rucks and stuff running things. So, I think that was it. I think it was just Ballygunner seemed to hold that for a little bit longer than the Pearshig, and it's not that I'm not in the Pearshig. I thought, look, it was... I hope everybody enjoyed it. And Jesus, like, you know, two club games past 4 hours of most people's lives yesterday.
Isn't it brilliant that our winter is being shortened by this quality of hurling at this time of year?
Sure. Like I refer to it multiple times in the show, like we were starving for it during COVID, you know, like, you know, I keep repeating myself, I'm an avid golfer and I got to play golf yesterday morning. Like, and it's because the weather was good. Like, and my statement was that, look, I got another week out of golf through the winter, you know, because the weather was good. Yes, it's the same for us in hurling. Like, at the end of the day, like, you know, there are a lot of people at home sitting down that can't wait for the National League to start up again, you know, that don't have any ties with Ballygunner and the Pearshig. Like, you know, they can't wait for their county to get back on it again. But that was brilliant to watch. You know, both games, like, look, we'll go on to the second game soon, like, but, like, both games are exciting, and you're sitting down, and up until each last puck of the game for, you know, the first game, like, you didn't know which way it was going, and, you know, a twist or turn in the other game would have turned it back into Pearsic's favour, so, but, listen, it was absolutely brilliant, and as a Cork, or sorry, as a Hurling supporter, you'd be kind of, you know, you'd be thrilled that we're gone through to the middle of November now, seeing such high quality, and more to come.
There were a number of rooks, Anthony, that they're after the second goal for Napiercik. And Ballygunner came out on top. There were four of them in a short period, either side of half time, and Ballygunner won three of them. When that happens and your team comes out with the ball, wins the free or wins possession, gets a score from it, what impact does that have on your team?
Yeah, it's funny, we had a coach there, Jim McCarthy from the Glen, when we won the Intermediate Hurler under Cantorc, and he used to say a ruck is created when someone made a mistake, you know? Like, if you think about hurling, like, if hurling was played like basketball perfectly up and down the field, there should be no rucks. But there's actually more rucks coming into the game now, especially in winter hurling, because of, like I mentioned a second ago, intensity of opposition. It's just like midfielders have a split second. Like, I was sitting on the couch watching yesterday going, like, if I had the ball there, like, you don't even have a millisecond. It's gone again, or you're getting thumped. You know what I mean? Like, it's just absolute war zone in the middle. Like, that the ball hits the ground, there's five or six lads into it. And there's a couple of things to lead into that. Number one is technique. The lower a guy gets, the willingness to get in and get it. But when they explode out of that, like, not only do your players get it, your crowd get it. You know, it's a moment where who's getting it. Next thing, some fella just comes out like a bat over a hill and breaks through the tackle and comes out. And, you know, the way he has to come out of a ruck, he's going and his hands are flying, his head and he's sprinting, and it's a crowd pleaser. So it gets your teammates going as well. And then when there's a free given after, as usual, the fist pump given as well with it, like, to kind of get the teammates going. But it's just like, it's a sign of, yeah, we were here to hurl, but we're here to win the dirty shit as well. Like, you know, we're really going to get down and dirty here. And, like, both teams again yesterday were just up for a battle. Like, it was just... Well, the Gaelic grounds was fantastic. The ground is bound to be softer. Like, so the ball hits the ground. Next to the two fillers in, next to the five fillers in, and out you come, you know. And even though, like, there were a lot of those rucks, like, it still didn't take away from the game. You have a lot of the times there, like, where it's a throw-in. And, like, you know, in fairness, Riffy left him go very well, like, unless it was a big foul, he pulled it up. But, yeah, I would say, look, I just think it's a sign of intensity. I think it's a sign of, yeah, look, we're up for this. And I think, as you said, they won a few in a row, like, and next you start to get confidence that you're really in it, like, you know, and you're showing energy from it, you know. And but the funny thing, and what I liked about you bringing up that is, there are moments of games that a lot of people mightn't pick out. You know, we'll all remember the goals and the points and the scores, but it's the dirty stuff. It's the guy that's willing to make a run away so he corner forward can make the space instead. You know, and all those kind of things that I love seeing in hurling, and there was a crazy amount of rucks yesterday. But it's just we want it. Sometimes it's just a we want it more thing.
What happened in the Pearsic in the second half?
I think it's a mixture. I think it has to be a mixture. Like, I know Sean O'Donnell was with Ballygunner the last years. No, I don't think he's with them anymore officially. Like, but I'm sure he's got a few lads working for him. And even if he doesn't, the memories of what he would have thought is just. You know, getting the midfielders out getting the midfielders protecting the half back line, getting half forwards out protecting midfielders and making a bit of a battle again and just stopping the opposition from working it out. Like, and I just really think that it was more what Ballygunner did, sorry, than what Napiercik didn't. Like, there was an interesting thing that TJ Carr put up yesterday, was the paths to the final. And with all due respects, and we are one of those teams now, like, so I it's a self-criticism here. I don't think either team would have met that intensity yet this year or anywhere near it. You know, and I think that was a big thing there as well, that, like, you know, Ballygunner probably brought something to the table that Napiercik hadn't seen. And while in the first half matched them, like Napiercik had us blown out of the water in 35 minutes because of their fitness and physicality. Kilmallock, I know, came back against them in the final. But again, nothing like Ballygunner did. So I wonder, was it just the fact that Ballygunner kept at it for the 65 minutes, however much injury time is played, that they just wore the Pearsic down eventually, you know, like they've been doing to us and teams like that. So I wonder, was it more what Ballygunner did and kept doing rather than what Pearsic didn't do, if you get me?
That's an interesting point, because Ballygunner obviously had the Munster quarterfinal match in addition to winning their county championship, and they, they beat Kilrowan pretty comfortably, but still it was another game to get them battle hardened. Also thinking back to Napiercig when they won the county championship in 2020, they didn't get to play in Munster that year. And I'm just wondering, does the fact that Ballygunner, they didn't get to play in Munster that year because of COVID and there was no Munster club championship. Ballygunner, of course, did get the opportunity to go through a Munster campaign last year and an All-Ireland campaign, and it clearly has brought them on. I'm just wondering if the intensity that they encountered, and particularly when you think of the final victory over Ballyhale, did that have a significant impact in the second half?
Yeah, potentially. Like, I definitely think it's Ballygunner stuck with everything for 60, 65 minutes. Like, and it's like anyone else of us trying to play in the Pearsheet, we had to put our perfect performance together for 70 minutes nearly, like with injury time, to have any hope of staying with the Pearsheet or beating them. Kilmallock the same. Versus Ballygunner did stick with it. Like, and like, again, like, there is no criticism here. I know there was a lot of like, oh, Napiercig did this and didn't do that and do that. There's no digs here at Napiercig. Like, I thought it really brought, they bought, like, the hits in the first half. Jeez, like, we go on about Will O'Donoghue, like, but Jesus Christ, the man nearly broke, fell in half with his leg, like, standing up, you know what I mean, and got a yellow card for it. Like, it was just, you know, there was just constant contacts. And even the smaller players, like, the man, he's there, they're tough boys from Ballygunner. They're, like, they're wiry players, like, and you know, they're just wanting hits and tackles, like, and they just kept going. And was it a case they just had maybe, like you said earlier, the All-Ireland experience, the fitness or whatever it was, but they just seemed to just keep it going for the 65 minutes or however long the game was on for. So I'd say it's more what Ballygunner did than Napiercig didn't.
It was certainly an absolutely super game to watch. It was like watching an inter-county game.
Absolutely.
Casey's injury that you referred to earlier, Anthony, look, we hope he's okay, but if he isn't, what implications will that have for Limerick?
Do you know, it is, look, I think it's more of an impact to the individual here now than the team. I think, like, he's already gone through, himself and his brother went through this injury before, like, the guy doing it for, I hope it's only his second time, like, you know, I don't know, I haven't heard of him doing for it, but I'd hope that, you know, a serious injury, I mean, sorry, like, Limerick will cope. Dan Morris, he'll go back full back, and Kyle Hayes will probably go back wing back. Keane Lynch will go in centre forward. Like, you know, like, to not laugh at the injury, but to laugh at that situation where you can just, oh yeah, we'll just throw Keane Lynch back in. Like, you know, it's just, it's incredible. Dan Morrissey, who was an all-star fullback, I think, as well, like, was just go back in there, and Kyle Hayes goes back as an all-star half back again. Keane Lynch goes in centre forward and off you go. But like, it's more the individual here anyway. You'll be kind of thinking about injuries because, do you know, the problem with the club hurling this time of year, like, or any hurling this time of year, a cruciate or whatever, and hopefully it's not, is that's probably his next year done as well.
That's, you know, grim. It's a grim prospect, and let's hope.
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't
bear out that way. Fingers crossed, yeah.
Ballyhale, 1-point winners over St Finbar's. You know, I'm glad this match was on first rather than second, because in terms of standard, it looked a level below the second game. Would you agree with that little harsh statement on yourself?
Yeah, you have to look. You'd have to say that the standard of hurling in the second game was definitely faster and better, and like, a lot of things led into it. Like, I was joking there a while ago with you before we started, like, that it looked like the TG Carr cameraman was going to be blown off his tower in the first or second minute, and then it's like it just looked to be a little bit. Pitch looked a little heavier. Like, no, Gaelic Grounds has just been done, and I think it was only its second match on it, so it was exceptional. Pitch looked a bit heavier and windier conditions, which means it was going to lead to a lower quality game. But I just think if you put the two teams in the first team or first game up against the second team on paper, there would be probably a bit of a gulf in class on paper. Saying that, quality wise might have been lesser than the second game, but excitement was there. Like, it had the game had everything, absolutely everything. And, you know, I think the Bears, Bally are thrilled. And a manager referred to it after, and he said, look, a 1-point win, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, we got through. And you could see it after. Like, I don't think their performance will be something they'll be writing home about, because the fact it was 15 against 14. If it was 15 against 15 for the whole game and they won by a point, they'd be ecstatic and delighted. But the fact that you were playing against one less player would probably make them look at their performance and go, look, that's not good enough. And we're going against Ballygunner here in the Munster final. We're going to have to come up however many levels. On the flip side of that, I think if I was a Bears person, I'd be very proud. I thought it was to lose an intercounty hurler so early in the game. It's very easy throwing a towel. And, you know, when it happened, I kind of said to myself, oh, shit, you know, there's another, like, you know, I thought it was going to be a bad game then after, like, you know what I mean? Because I thought, right, Tony Kelly's going to get more space, you know, they're going to get in top, whatever like that. But, geez, the Bar showed huge, huge courage and huge pride to get it so close. It wasn't be within the puck of taking it to extra time, like, you know. But yeah, you'd have to look. There's no point in saying otherwise. And it's not a slight at Ballier or the Bears either. Like, but the second game was just a better game of hurling. It was, you know, higher standards and everything like that. But you're talking about probably two club All-Ireland champions over the last how long against each other versus the Bears, who are an up-and-coming team. And I'd love to see if they got out into Munster next year, they'd probably do a lot better again. And Ballyhea just probably, like, going into the final, will probably be lacking that bit of quality to keep Ballygunner close, you know.
What do you make the sending off?
Yeah, so first viewing, like, you know, and I'm not going to sit in my fence here, on the fence here before I say, like, first viewing, I said, oh, shit, that's straight red, like, elbow into the face. I think Jack Brown went down, right? Like, look, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt there, that the face guard met him, you know, in the face. He went down. And, but then when you see he was actually throwing the hurley away, which, by the way, no, like, I'm not, like, look, you shouldn't do it. 100% you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't be throwing the hurley away. But the motion of him throwing the hurley away took his hand into it. But, like, how many times did we see it in replay? 5, 6, 7, you know, between half-time and full-time, versus a referee and a linesman who saw straight away, might not have even seen the hurley flying, you know what I mean? And an elbow into the face, like, which, look, an elbow into the face is a straight red. Elbow into the face is straight red, like, whether it's whatever like that. But having looked back in it, which is no good to any referee or anyone like that, I would say that it shouldn't have been a red. I think it should have been a yellow card. But I can understand where the ref was coming from. But for me, it wasn't a red, like, because of the he was just trying to throw away the hurley. But look, like, it was actually funny. It was on Twitter last night. And I suppose, look, there's positives and negatives here of Twitter and stuff like that. But there was a big debate going on about it. Like, and people are going to sit in there. But, like, the only thing I don't like is people going on to social medias and slating the individuals involved. Whether Jack, like, how do we know how hurt Jack Brown was? You know, Jack went down, and Connor, like, people are saying, ah, he was stupid to do what he did and he cost his team. Like, from the angle of the replay, it looked like he didn't even know he was there. You know, he was just throwing his arm away to fire the hurley. So, look, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that it was a yellow, but it was a pity. It was a pity. No, it still turned out to be a cracking game, as in excitement, but it was a pity for Connor himself and the Bears that he went so early, especially.
You could tell by his reaction on the television that he clearly felt it was accidental and that he was hard done by. Made a big difference to the game, though, Anthony. And possibly, possibly the biggest impact on the result.
But, like, you're not only remember, we're talking about club hurling here, right? And not only did the Bears lose a player, they lost an intercounty player. And for anyone that watched the county final, Connor's impact for the two goals, his pace, he ran through, he scored once, created another. So, like, he was a huge part of their game plan, you know, where he was going to be trying to turn the Ballyhea defence around and run at them. And in those conditions, carrying the ball actually is a good thing to do, you know, like, as in he's able to take them on at pace. So not only did they lose a player, they lost one of their inter-county players. So he was a huge, huge, huge loss to the Bears and stuff. But, you know, and they would have worked on stuff during to get him into games, you know. And then after 9 minutes, I think it was, he was taken out of it. But again, like, I know we'll discuss it, like, but what a rally from the Bears after that.
So do they win this game if they keep him on the pitch?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I don't think, do you know what, right? Yeah, I think so. But then, like, I think it was the Ballyhea manager said after, like, that they had a man sent off against Cratlow and they hurled very well. And then he found it difficult. He said sometimes a spare man can be a hindrance. No, look, if you, like, I think it was Jack Brown, I think, went back as a sweeper, like, and you're creating an intercounty defender as a sweeper there. So I can't stick by that argument. Like, I think that he hurled a lot of ball as well. But for me, yeah, I think Ballyhea weren't at their best. I thought that the Bears had done a great job of them. I thought Jamie Burns, a fullback there, had a great battle with Tony Kelly. Like, you know, I think Tony got 2 or 3 massive points. So, and don't get me wrong, and he was excellent, but not the Bears did very well in him. And it looked like that they did well, and Gary Brennan's goal was obviously a massive one as well. But I think if the Bears had kept him on, yeah, if you were asking, I think they would have won the game. And, like, that's not blaming, do you know, that's no blame thrown. I'm just saying if they had 15 men, it looked like they could have done it, yeah.
Tell us about your impression of Gary Brennan as a hurler. He's well known as a footballer. He was an outstanding intercounty footballer. What do you make of him as a hurler?
Do you know what? I think, again, afterwards, the manager referred to him as a leader. Like, when you look at him, he's just a huge man, and he's willing to win those dirty balls. Like, and what I really liked about him is, I'm not saying limitations is an insult, like, but, like, he knows when he's Tony Kelly looping around him, giving the ball. Like, you know, he's no problem giving off to DC Kelly or any of these guys, you know. So he seems to be a very selfless person. Just, I never met the man, and I don't know the man, right? But from watching him on the pitch, he seems to be a sound, you know, good old-fashioned hurler that is really just, I'll win the dirty ball. I've no problem giving it off. I don't care who scores. I'll do the hard work for you. And he's a guy that I think most managers would absolutely love to have in their setup. You know, like, the goal was just, he ran through. No one kept him. That was the thing. Like, maybe they were all kind of wondering, would he kind of strike it over the bar or give it off and stuff? And then, like, in tough conditions, he put a low shot. Like, in a low shot in the winter is very hard to save. But he was just, he's just a great leader for him. Like, you know, for a footballer coming back to play hurling, like, he leads that team, you know, and gives the likes of Tony Kelly and DC a chance to kind of just focus on their skills side of things, even though, like, they're both well able to win the ball in there as well. But a great guy, and I'd say most managers would love to have a player like him on their squads. Yeah.
Do you give him a chance against Ballygunner in the final?
No. Unless it's, like, remember now, like, we're going into real winter weather now, like, unless it's a heavy pitch, and which I doubt it will be, like, presume it's going to be Thurles or the Park, like, I don't know, is that a fixture even made yet? But I don't, to be honest, like, not, but, like, I'm basing it off the two performances yesterday. Like, I thought Ballyhale, unless they can go and come up with something, like, but Tony Kelly would want to have a day of days to give him an opportunity. But I just think that, and that's, like, again, like, and I, like, people are going to be sick of me saying this, this isn't an insult to Ballyhale. This Ballygunner team are just, Jesus Christ, like, I said it to you there last week, I was saying there's three teams that I currently looked at that are looking to win in All-Ireland. One were in a Pearshig, they're gone. One is Ballyhale Shamrocks, and one is Ballygunner, and we've two out of those three left. So to me, the three of those teams were just the most intercounty experience, I suppose, and on their teams at a high level. So I to be honest, I can't see a winner bar Ballygunner now.
It's funny that you mention that, because the Ballyhale manager afterwards actually said that it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but he still referred to the fact that the Munster final could have taken place in Limerick.
I think they're sick of hearing it. I think that was his kind of little dig back to people that have been saying it to them all week and stuff, and into their players. And look, they'll use that. Like they're not going to come out and lie down. I think they'll use that as fuel for the fire. But I just think, look, assuming Ballygunner, right? Assuming Ballygunner played to Ballygunner's levels, that's what I mean. I can't see another winner. Like, there's always opportunities and chances, like, that something will go wrong, but I just think Ballygunner have just an exceptional bunch of players. Like, you know, one guy yesterday, actually, sorry, I'm going to have to go back to this game, but you asked me what changed the game. I thought what kept him in the game for a long time was Pádraig Mahony. I thought his long-range shooting yesterday, when the Pearshig were sitting back protecting Desi Hutchinson and Fitzgerald side, I thought Pádraig Mahony went out to the middle of the field and got two or three scores. And when we was playing against Waterford for years, right, if Pádraig Mahony was half forward, we didn't care who the other two were. We didn't follow the other two, but whoever was on Pádraig Mahony went after him, because we knew he could shoot from 70, 80 yards and score. So we send them out after him. And yesterday, he just rolled back the years again and popped over very important scores at an important time, just to keep them in the game, you know. So, but, like, they have a mix of players all over the field there, like, that are just, I thought their midfield partnership yesterday were exceptional, you know, as well. So I just think Ballyhale struggle to stay with the amount of, you know, fires they'll have to put out.
Is there any way they can win? I know you've referenced the fact that they could do with a bad day, but if you were plotting a way for Ballyhale to come out as winners, what would it be?
Tony Kelly, Gary Brennan and DC probably have to have the games of their lives. Like, they just have to absolutely, like, Gary's going to have to win ball upon ball and just be laying off, and it's getting Tony Kelly on the ball as much as you can. Like, you know, it looks, there's no, like, Clare do it, so how is the club team not going to want to do it? You know, I thought the Bears, Jamie, yesterday, had a cracking game on him. Like, just kept with him, kept nullifying him. I just think if he can get on the ball as much as he can and getting your matchups in the defence right. Like, Ballyhale have a good team. Like, you know, they have a fine, fine team with a lot of Clare experience in it as well. But it's just that this juggernaut, Ballygunner, just seems to be, and in, like you referred earlier, the experience of winning the All-Ireland, they're going to need goals. They're going to need goals. They're going to need, I would say, if Ballyare to win, unless the weather conditions are shocking, which you can't predict, and unless there isn't a sending off or anything, I think Ballyare will need 3 goals to have any chance of staying within the game with the likes of Ballygunner. But we'll see up close to the game when you see where it's on, forecast, what it's like and stuff, you'll probably be able to predict a bit better. But I just think that Ballyhale would want to have the best day of their lives in Ballygunner to come off the mark a bit.
That's coming up in a couple of weeks. We've got some fascinating hurling coming up before then. We've got Nace, the Kildare champions, who had that magnificent victory in the quarter final of the Leinster Championship last weekend. They come up against Ballyhale Shamrocks. That's this weekend at Croke Park. St Mullins from Carlo take on Kilmacud Crokes. It's good to see it in Croke Park to start with, Anthony, isn't it?
Massive. I think it was Sean Kelly who was the president at the time, wasn't it, that opened up all the junior intermediate ones. Like, I just think, look, like I said to you there, one of the main reasons in any of these matches being good quality is a good pitch. Like, and Ennis is a fine cracking field as well, but when you see the Gaelic grounds compared to yesterday, like Parky Keeve, Thurles, Gaelic grounds, you know, Croke Park, like the drier pitches, especially in winter hurling, you try and get them in there. So opening up Croke Park for these is going to help the quality of the game. That's all you care about. You know what I mean? I know it's a costly thing to open it up for the day, but I'm all for games getting in there and playing it, because every player wants to play there. Like, you know, as soon as a junior county team win or an intermediate team win and they try to go into the Munster or the Leinster or the wherever, the Ulster, like all they're thinking about is, geez, if we get to all these, we're playing in Croke Park. That's what they say, like, you know. So getting to play there with the club is the main thing. So the more, the merrier. The more times they do it, the better, yeah.
Especially this time of year, absolutely.
And the park down here, I'd be saying the same to the park down here. Like, I think that, like, when you've got winter matches, like, you know, I'd love to. Maybe it's been made and I haven't seen it, and I apologize if I haven't. But like the Munster final of the club should be played in Parky Keeve, like, just with the surface at the moment, just to give both teams an opportunity to play on harder surface. Yeah.
Before then, we've also got the Galway Senior Hurling Championship final replay between Loughrea and St Thomas's. That's going to be in Pearse Stadium this weekend. You have to wonder, what in God's name, when Galway were knocked out of the championship in early July, are we doing having a county final, albeit a replay, on November 27th? What do you make of that?
Do you know what? Like, the flip side of that, I think, and maybe I might be wrong here, wasn't it the Wexford team were knocked out and they had 13 weeks to wait? Yeah. I'm just thinking of Pearse Stadium. Pearse Stadium in November for me would just give me the heebie-jeebies. No, like, we just go up there in February or March to play league games and stay in Salt Hill the night before, like, and oh Christ almighty, you'd hear the wind and the rain baiting off your window. So it's not a place I'd like to be playing in November, and like that makes it, like, especially there. So there, no, and Friar Field were two pitches, and Leash, Port Leash, whatever it is about those, the wind will just be howling. It'll make it literally a two-half game, like, whichever way the wind is going. But yeah, I won't be going up to watch it. Anyway, I'll tell you that. I won't be going near Pearse Stadium in fucking November.
The winners of that, it's interesting that the winners of that game play the winners of the Ulster Championship final between Dunloy and Slochneil. Now, Slochneil have been consistent for a number of years. They ran Ballyhale to 5 points. They ran Ballygunner to 5 points. You wouldn't write off an Ulster champion in a semi-final against a Galway champion.
No, Jesus, no. I would not. Maybe it's another day's debate, like, but I went up to Cushendall a few years back to present medals there up to the McNaughtons, and the passion and the love for the hurling up there was just frightening. And I actually think the only thing from stopping Ulster teams from going next level again is the geographical area of, like, trying to get challenge matches. Like, I remember they came down to play matches in Thurles, and they brought in 2 games over the weekend just to stay overnight. And you know what I mean? Like, you know, like I here in Cork, you can pick up a challenge match and play within an hour and a half. You've got multiple hurling counties, you know what I mean? Like, well, I think that's the one thing, like, trying to find, like, we spoke that Napiershig and Ballygunner brought an intensity of a height. Like, these two teams will probably not have, you know, will be doing the same thing by the time they reach the Galway teams. Do you know what I'm saying to you? Like, to get to the level of that, like, so I think the quality of hurlers up there is unreal. It's just the pace of the game. Can they get the pace of the game up to meet the same, whoever comes out of Galway? But would you write them off? Absolutely not. No, at your peril. And again, winter hurling will play a lot here again, like, you know, like like Schlachtneil, assuming we'll see what happens, but like they're a big fit team because of the football as well. Like, you know, they're physical, strong men, and winter hurling, like, they will show no mercy to whoever's playing against them. So no, I wouldn't write them off in the slightest. And when we see the fixture again and the date and venues and stuff, it'll make it more interesting.
That'll be, if memory serves me correct, the last weekend before Christmas.
That's it. Like, Jesus Christ, like, you know, it's like, that's like you're tying with storms, you're tying with everything, you know what I mean? So it'll be like it's a very thing. But no, I not a hope, but you'd never write off any team in anything. We played the Armagh champions in 17, and like for the first while they gave enough. Geez, they were strong physical men, like, you know, we were lucky we played above in Kildare and it was a dry day, and we got out of there, like, but Christ, the hurling wise, they were as matched to us, no problem, yeah.
Do you think they'll ever bridge the gap? Because this conversation has been going on for a good 30 years, like, you know.
I never experienced love like Cushendall that time. I never experienced love for hurling. It actually gave me a kind of a shot in the arm again going up there, because we love hurling. Don't get me wrong. We all love hurling, but Christ, they love hurling up there. I would love to see it. I would love to see the Antrims, you know, which they've done, in fairness to them, the league, like, you know, they've done a great job up there, like, you know, and to get to the top tier, I don't know. It's very difficult. A lot will have to change and a lot will have to happen for a team from Ulster to kind of come and bridge that gap again. But as a neutral, like, or as a spectator, you'd love to see it because of the passion that they bring. I don't know what's going to have to happen for it to bridge it. But I think the only issue they have is like trying to get matches, challenge matches against teams in Leinster and Munster, you know, and like the Galways of this world, like, is just, it's a huge trek and anything like that. Like, but I'd love to see people that are more passionate about the sport.
Well, the difference it would make to hurling, we can't have enough good teams at the top table. On the subject of a good team, Tipperary announced their 40-man panel last week, Anthony. Noel McGrath is their new captain. Patrick Bonnemar has decided to go again. What was your take on the announcements?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. And that's why I kind of flagged it with you. I love the idea of them actually giving people something to talk about. Like, you know, like I go back to COVID again, we were starving and talking and presuming and everything like that. Now, Tipperary people, number one, are obviously going to be the most interested about it. But it gives other people a look and go, fair play at the Bonnemar, Callan and all these guys. And everyone wanted to know what Cahill was going to do. Who's he going to leave in? Who's he going to leave out? You know, Bubba's Dwyer didn't make the cut this time. I'm sure he's been told it's not the end of the road, or, you know, go away and get right or come back. And maybe he has been told it's the end of the road. I don't. But like, it got another talking point, you know, that he's, you know, that for people to discuss and have a, you know, a chat about. And that's what it's about this time of year when there isn't as much sport going on in the hurling football. But like, what I'd say is that, like, it was funny, right? I was involved with UL last year. We went up and we played, we were playing DIT. And so DIT were actually playing LIT in our group. And I went down and I saw, I had no program, and I heard something like, Bonner, pass the ball, you know, for DIT. And I assumed it was, you know, like everyone, like you'd have same fellas with same nicknames all over the place. So I took no notice. Next thing I looked at this fella picking up a ball and going on a run, and it was Bonner Maher, like. And I'm kind of going, how the feck is he playing Fitzgibbon hurling still, like, you know? But I met him after our game above, like, it's great to see him go again, because he's one lad, he always comes up to me no matter when they hammered us or whatever like that, shook hands and stuff. He's a great guy. And I'd love to see him having an injury-free season and see what he can get out of it, like, you know, because Cahill is four hard-working men, and there's no harder-working player in the country over the last decade than him. But, like, I hope he's got the gears to go again. And, like, the talk was, would he hang on to the likes of Callanan and stuff? Of course, you have to give him a go, you know. And I think they're dead right, but for me, it was the younger lads. I had first-hand experience of Brian O'Mara last year in UL, like, and I think he's a superstar in the making, like, you know. So it's like, I tell you, Tip will be all right next year. Just looking through that squad, if Cahill can get him right, you know, and buying into his ideas, Tip will be all right, you know. Even I think there's a player there, I might be wrong, no, he's playing now for a team in Clare, a club in Clare. Like, he's brought back into the panel because Liam Cahill had worked with him in under 21 hurling. So a lot of these boys, they're gone from Sheedy's fellas to Liam, to Cahill's kids, like, you know what I mean? So, like, you have to bring in a lot of boys back in. So I tell you now, from a team that I was writing off the very start of last year, I won't be writing them off just as quick next year, assuming that they get the injuries right. But, like, you've Noel McGrath as captain, he's a gentleman. I've met him multiple times, absolute gent and a fantastic hurler. And Ronan Maher, who's one of the best hurlers in the country, as vice captain. So they'll lead a good group there. But yeah, look, I think it's good. I'd like to see it kind of going around the country and see what people do with, like, with each county kind of just send out a thing. Because it's nice for those people, younger fellas especially, to for their families to be officially notified and kind of knowing around that your son has made a panel, you know. So I'd love to, I think it'd be great for every, and for journalists as well, like, you know, for people to see and, you know, put into speculation, see who's in and out.
Do you remember the night you got your first phone call to tell you you're going to be part of the court panel?
Yeah, John Allen actually said it to
me. What year was that? 2006?
Winter. I know, was it the winter of five leading into six? So Cork had had lost Ireland 3, won it in 4, won it in 5. Because when I joined the panel, they haven't won all Ireland since. So I wonder who's to blame.
What was that like, Anthony? What was the process behind?
A phone call. It was a phone call. It was a phone call to say, look, that he'd like to welcome me in and wonder would I be willing to be a part of the Cork Senior Hurling panel for 2006, whatever like that. Sure, like, he didn't take me a millisecond to give him back the answer, like, you know. So I was thrilled.
Fearful it was a wind-up, or did you believe it was?
No. I've been wound up multiple times before. Ronan Curran there, I asked him for a number one day, and I don't know, it was a physio or something like that, or I don't know who was looking for anything. He sent me on a journalist number, like, so I was ringing up going, hi, how are you? Is this, let's say John. No, that's not. And he said, all right, Anthony Nash here, and I was wondering, and then he was like, Anthony, this isn't. And I was like, sorry, who is this? So he gave me a journalist number, like, so Jesus, he caught me a beauty. But
While we're on the subject of wind-ups, you said there's a few more. Let's hear them.
No. It's mainly involving him, the langer. Like, he was always always a step ahead of me, like, you know. I'll have to think of a few. Oh, there was plenty. Unfortunately, he himself, known Brian Murphy, kind of just used me as a bit of a battering ram for their jokes, like, for the start of the campaigns anyway. But I knew John's voice, like, but yeah, I was delighted because I'd been brought in under Don Lograde as well in 4, I think, just for a couple of training sessions with the under 21s because they needed an extra goalie. So I kind of knew what I was going into, and it was just an incredible, like, the Cork setup at the time, like, was creme de la creme. Like, it was just the best of the best. It was like, whatever you wanted, you got, like, you know, on gear and everything. And Jesus, I was a young fella, like, it was huge. So we trained it for Moy in Castle Martyr, didn't, like, and sure, it didn't matter what the weather was, like, I was like a little lamb running out to the field. I was so excited and wanting to impress, like. And it's funny, like, when I first started, like, I was pulling off one-on-one point blank saves and going home with 50 bruises, like, just showing them all, like, sure, like, it didn't matter a shit, like, because Don Logue was going to be in goals anyway. And then the later on in my life, when I became the number one for Cork, like, you know, the last training session, like, if there was a 50-50 chance you getting hurt, you were out the side of the goals, like, just in case you missed the championship match, like, you know. Because I saw, I was wondering leading into games, like, Don Lowell didn't want to do too much shot stopping and everything like that, but sure, he didn't want to get injured. But it was fierce exciting, like, sure, it was, like, I was a young fella, I was 20-21. Like, things have changed, like, you know, I often discuss this, Patrick Horgan made the panel as, I think he was 20 or something like that. Like, Patrick Horgan was an exceptional minor. Like, he was the talk, 19 or 20, whatever it was. Like, there's a lot of guys being brought in for trials left, right, and centre now, you know what I mean? And, like, but for back then, it was because Paul Morrissey went off the panel from Newtown was the reason I got in. Like, you know, apart from that, I was going to have to put in a couple of exceptional years of performances to even break in. But it was just, yeah, it was a huge honour for me and my family. Yeah.
And what sort of thing would you have done when you first got in terms of this time of year? Would you have been in the gym the whole time, or what do panels do at this time of year?
So we had a fitness coach, another Sean McGrath Bantry this time, and we did a fitness test, and we did a bleep test, and we did sprint tests. So as a goalkeeper, obviously you should be, you know, really fast off the line, like, you know, and you don't need to be overly aerobically fit, like, you know, it's just more for your head and stuff like that. So I did the bleep test and I lasted until the last 10 players, like, I was up the top. And then we did a sprint test and I was near the bottom 10. And he came up to me kind of knowing full well, like, you know, I hadn't met him before. And he was like, what position do you play in, young fella? And I was like, I'm a goalkeeper. And he said, yeah, okay. So you're very aerobically fit, but sprint wise, you're not very quick. He said, would you think that'd be good for your position? I was like, okay, welcome to the big boys league here. Like, because I just thought, get fit. Like, I didn't understand the ins and outs of it. So for me, it was just like a country boy coming up, and next thing I was learning about it all. But so it was just basically fitness testing, and then we got gym programs and we trained on the pitch, and it was a slog, like, it was tough. But as goalkeepers with Don Logue, we kind of broke away and did our own fitness work. It was entirely different to the lads. We did no long running, like, you know, it was always kind of explosive stuff. And one winter in Mallow, we went into the alleys while the boys were out in the field, and we played like mopper games and touch work and everything like that, because the boys were outside doing hours of running, like, you know. So the lads were always slagging us in that we're not fit at all. Like, you know, we wouldn't be, we get the soft touch. Like, but we used to always say to them, then, right, you go into goals the day of championship. So you all want to be a goalie until the day of championship till you drop a ball in the back of the net. Like, but so yeah, it was just like gym work winter wise. I think nowadays it's like a lot of it's gym work, like gym work. And then when you get out to the pitch, then it's just fitness and implementing what your idea, your game plan is going to be. And then when the weather starts to get better, you improve your skills, because like you have to understand a lot of facilities nowadays, like, you know, wouldn't be, you know, like you, we were in CIT pitch four, like, well, it was brilliant. Like we were running around in puddles sometimes, you know, so your skill and your hurling wouldn't be, a lot of it's dictated by the weather, basically, like what kind of a session you do in the night.
How was doing a load to you when you first came in?
Very good. Yeah, I've documented that now before, like that I, like we have had, he was very open, and I hope I echo those sentiments to the Collinses as well before I left, like that, like, you know, you're competing for the jersey, and all, we always were, you know, but like, I suppose when I first came in, like Don Logue didn't see me as a threat, and rightly so, like, you know, he was probably the best goalkeeper in the country at the time, but he was very open to me, and then later on in the careers, like he kind of, he would have helped me out and stuff as well. Then he got injured in 12 when I got in, and that kind of would have ended our, let's say, playing relationships and stuff like that, like, because obviously he went off the panel then in 13. But do you know what, if we met in the side of the street, we still have a very good relationship, like, you know, we wouldn't be ringing each other on a daily basis, but if I ever needed anything, he'd be the same. But was the same when I first came in, helped me out. He actually joked to me, so when I was 16, 17, I was very heavy, like I again was just lacking the knowledge of diets and everything like that, and we played when I was 18, I think, with intermediates, and he saw me, like, and he looked at me, and I, you know, like he kind of goes, this guy mightn't be a threat to me, because I obviously hadn't self-discipline outside of the field to keep my fitness levels up. And then the next time when I joined the panel, that's why I had become aerobically fit, because I knew I had to cut down weight. So I did an awful lot of running and stuff. But he said it to me, like he said, when I first saw you, I said, I didn't think I'd see you again. And, you know, I kind of understood like what he meant by it as well. Like, you know, and he was right too. Like, you know, if I didn't look after myself, no manager was going to look at me, like, because I wasn't, it's not even the weight thing. It's just how you present yourself, as in, are you willing to give that effort that's needed, like, you know, and I obviously wasn't doing it off the pitch properly at the time as a minor, just sort of minor.
After he retired, was he good to you then? Were you able to pick up the phone and shoot the breeze and ask for advice? And by this stage, the relationship presumably would have changed in the fact that he's not on the panel, you're the established number one, and he has moved on. How were things then?
Yeah, we kind of would have ended the relationship, didn't we? Like, as in, like, we would have, like, so myself and him weren't guys that would have texted and talked all the time anyway. We met at training 3 or 4 nights a week, like, so that was enough of a conversation. You know, he'd his group of circle of friends, like, that were probably the older generation, and I had mine, like, and it's not as if we were not talking to each other, it's just that we wouldn't have been buddies outside of training, like, and you'd see an awful lot of panel members like that, like, you know, you tie yourself to a bigger group, whatever, but when he went, like, if I needed anything, I could have, but I didn't really, like, you know, we kind of both went our separate ways, really, like, you know.
By the end of your inter-county time, how were things in November then compared to November 2006? So you retired November 2020.
2020, okay. Yeah, the tip game, yeah.
What was this time of year like for an inter-county panellist at the end of your career compared to the start?
So a lot of the lads nowadays are younger, so therefore there's an awful lot of stuff going on between Fitzgibbon, freshers even for some of the lads. And then you'd have a couple of clubs still going through whatever, like, but for the lads that are doing nothing, that are just in with Cork or Limerick or whoever, it's gym work. It's just pounding the gym now, like, you're 3 or 4 days a week. Like, you're 3 or 4 days a week in the gym. Some lads go to the alleys. Like, when I was winter training there before, like, you'd be calling 4 or 5 times a week at least. You might go out on a Saturday night and have a few drinks or whatever like that, like, or meet up with your buddies, but, like, you were still full-time. Like, I used to go back at Christmas probably in the best shape of my life because I'd have no hurling done. It was all gym work for me. It was gym, pounding the gym. I didn't have to worry about my skill levels until the league started, like, you know, and even at that, you'd build into it. So it was gym work, like, and just absolutely hammering in the weights just to get yourself, you know, body, get your mind right as well, because, like, look, the better you're looking, you know, feeling and stuff like that, the better you're going to potentially play the following year. But throughout my career, the winter would have been just slamming. All of us would have been just sheer gym work, like,
together, or did you?
No, separately. Like, so you break away separately, and you might be brought. Like, do you know the thing? So the thing about that, like, it depends on the manager and it depends on the county. Like, some teams will be brought back in as a group at the moment, And then some teams will know, like, I'm only reading from outside. Like, I don't think Limerick could be brought back in collectively. Like, I think if you look at their physiques, they know what they're doing, like, you know, and if they don't want to be like that, then they're not going to be on the panel. So I think a lot of them are trusted to go away. A new manager coming in, I'm not saying that it is happening, like, but Davy Fitz, Liam Cahill, Pat Ryan, you know, or whatever, like even a Darry Egan, Ashton Wexford, would he have brought them in together into the gym? First of all, maybe to get to know the players, and second of all, to make sure that they're doing the right things. So if you have a change of guard, like regarding S&C coach and stuff, you might be brought in together for a lot at the start. But if you've got a thing going, like the likes of Limerick, the likes of the Dublin Football, or a successful one, then you just go in. Because it's a break from each other as well, which is good as well, we found. You know, but I think it would be, depending on the county and the manager, yeah.
Is this, before I let you go, is this a good time of year to be an inter-county player? In the sense that, you know, mentally you get to recharge the batteries, the pressure isn't on, you don't have to worry about reading about yourself in a newspaper.
Yeah.
You can just focus on getting yourself fit, getting yourself right, and there's no pressure. Is it actually a nice time of year?
Yeah, 100%. I think the only problem you have this time of year is the feckin' weather, like, but yeah. I think a lot of lads try and get their holidays in, they try and get their nights away, their weekends away with their buddies, they try and make up for time that they've lost. You know, as you said, I think the biggest thing there is that you're out of the eye of the public for a while. No, you're never out of the eye of the public. Like, you know, you're constantly, I suppose, being judged on what you look like, how you hold yourself. Like, I would have been, for a good few of my years, I would have come back maybe a slight bit overweight. Slight, some lads would be listening to this, but I would have come back overweight. But I actually threw away my hurley for 3 months. I always put it away, like, and with the folks in the gym worked in and built up, like, but you know, it's mentally, like, I didn't mind going to the gym. That was the funny thing. Like, my body, I took a week or two off, like, but I felt bad then, and I go back into the gym then. Do you know what I mean? Like, so the gym was actually a break from hurling. For me, it was football boots and the hurley. That was what I was burnt out from. So I don't think fellas mind going into gym. Fellas like to look good anyway nowadays. Do you know what I mean? And they like to keep on top of their look. So it is a definite break. But you'll see, you know, in the next couple of weeks, every team are going to get back together. They'll all start getting back onto the pitch, because you have to understand now, like the Waterford Chris, or what's it called now, the North Cork or the co-op stores, super store event, that's starting in January the 4th or something, is it? You know, and in the league is 4th of February or something like that. Like, so, like, you're only 2 months away from the league. You know what I mean? And like, the big thing about the preseason training is injury prevention. So you don't want the fella chasing his tail in February to play a game, turning badly, pulling a hamstring or something like that. So, like, these guys will be getting onto the field and working full tilt from the next couple of weeks on. So the break is getting shorter and shorter because of the intensity and the demands needed for the intercounty game, you know. But definitely it was a time that I used to enjoy, because you had a bit of freedom at the weekends. The managers let you go. Like, if you trained on a Saturday morning, you go Saturday night, a couple of pints, relax with your buddies and do your own thing. And if you wanted to go to the gym at 5 o'clock, you went to 5, and if you didn't want to go, like, that was actually something massive for me as well, like, towards the end of my career, having to be somewhere at a certain time. That's what I loved about the off season. If I could get a gym session done before school, get it done, have the evening off, you know, you're your own boss. And I think that's the one thing about the amateur side of it, you know, that's the one thing that we do lack, like, is you have to get up, you have to go to college or work, and you have to go to training. They're full days, like, you know. But yeah, so I 100% agree with you on that one, yeah.
There's only so many years you can do that before you will burn out.
It's going to get shorter.
Yeah.
It's going to get shorter. Like, because, like, when you look at it, like, it's mentally more than physically, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of lads giving up their summers in, I'm hopeful the split season might allow lads maybe to try and work it in while not missing club championships and stuff, and just get them 3 or 4 weeks away somewhere with their buddies. But if it keeps going, the intercounty demand is going to get shorter and shorter, because people are just going to get sick of it. It's not physically, they're just going to get sick of it. You know what I mean? Like, you'll have fellas going back now in a week's time, 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week. Like, you have to be young and you have to be single and you have to be free and willing to do it. Like, but otherwise the careers are going to get shorter and shorter. Or else fellas will take years out, like the Dublin lads come back in after, you know. That might happen as well.
Fascinating stuff, Anthony. Well, won't keep you any longer, but great chat with you.
Thanks, Vinny.